Mr. President, I'd like to use my time by following up on the comments that our leader has just made with regard to the budget. It's the budget time in Washington right now, and although many people focus very heavily on the President's budget submission, the reality is that the budget is a uniquely legislative responsibility. The President makes a recommendation, but it is this Congress, the United States Senate, the United States House of Representatives, that establishes the budget for our nation. And the budget that was just announced yesterday and reviewed, which we will begin evaluating in the Budget Committee today, in my opinion, is not responsible. In fact, it's an embarrassment. Because we often talk about the fact that we want to avoid tax and spend politics in Washington. But this budget plunges headlong back into the very tax and spend policies of the past that have put us in the dire fiscal position that we are in today. The budget is a failure on the spending policies, it's a failure on the tax policies, and it's a failure on the additions to our national debt that are monumental that it contemplates, and it's a failure because it does not do a single thing about the most significant fiscal problems facing us, namely the entitlement problems and the entitlement portion of our budget. Let me go through those all just briefly. To do so, I want to kind of explain, and this might be a little bit basic to those who are in the middle of budgeting, but I'm not sure that the folks who pay attention to this understand exactly how the budgeting process works. This year, we will have the first budget that exceeds $3 trillion in federal spending. In rough approximations, that budget is approximately two-thirds entitlements and spending on the national debt. The interest on the national debt. The other remaining third is made up of what we call discretionary spending. And again, approximately half of that is our national defense budget, and the remaining half is the rest of our non-defense discretionary spending. Basically, the rest of everything in government other than our entitlement programs, interest on the national debt, and defense spending. The problem, the most significant problem that we face in our budget today is the fact that the two-third portion that I talked about, the entitlements and the interest on the national debt, are out of control. I often say that they're on autopilot. This spending in that two-thirds of our budget is growing at a rate that is often double, sometimes more than double, even triple or quadruple, the rate of the growth of our economy. And it grows without a vote in Congress. Previous Congresses have passed legislation, and previous presidents have signed the legislation into law that has established our entitlement programs. And these entitlement programs grow regardless of what we do here in Congress. We could never vote again here in Congress, and this spending would continue at rates that have nothing to do with the healthiness or the strength of our economy, and which, as I've said, are far outpacing our economy. And what does the budget that we have before us propose to do about this? Nothing. Nothing. Yet again, we have no opportunity proposed in the budget that we will be battling over to try to address this incredible fiscal problem that our nation faces. What does the budget do instead? It increases spending dramatically in the discretionary part of the budget, as well as allowing the entitlement section of the budget to rage uncontrolled. We are looking in this budget at a $350 billion deficit, and that doesn't count the war spending, except for a small portion of it. And it doesn't, I don't believe, take into account the fact that we just passed a stimulus package that put another $150 billion of debt on the backs of our children and grandchildren without paying for it under the PAYGO rules that we are required to live by here in Congress. In other words, $150 billion of new spending with no offsets against any other spending immediately put on the backs of our children and grandchildren in the form of national debt, which they will pay back at a much higher rate as interest compounds on it over the years. And what does this budget do in order to try to deal with this increased rush for spending? It raises taxes. It raises taxes over $700 billion in the next 5 years. Now, how does that happen? And by the way, this tax increase that America will face under the assumptions of this budget will occur with no vote in Congress. Now, how does that happen? To explain that a little bit, I need to go back and explain how our budget works. As I think most people in America are becoming aware, there is a filibuster in the United States Senate that requires, on major policies where there is disagreement, essentially requires that in order to move forward, 60 votes in the Senate are needed to get past the filibuster, to get cloture. And because of that 60-vote requirement in the Senate on filibusters, it's very difficult to either increase taxes or cut taxes, because there's usually opposition to either move, and it requires 60 votes to move forward. But there's one bill each year on which we don't have to have 60 votes. It's called the reconciliation bill. It's a part of our budget process. And because of the way that the law is set up, we can have a 50% plus one vote on that reconciliation bill each year. That's how the tax cuts of 2001 and 2003 were put into place. And those tax cuts, as a reminder, were reductions in the income tax marginal rates for every American, with the largest percentage of those income tax reductions in the lower and middle income categories. Reductions of the capital gains tax, reductions of the dividends tax, and a number of other very important tax policies that in 2001 and 2003 reduced taxes because we were able to use the reconciliation bill to reduce them. The problem is that the reconciliation process requires a sunset. People around the country must wonder why we are facing a sunset of these tax cuts. It's because in order to avoid the filibuster and get the tax cuts put into place, the reconciliation process was used, which itself carries a sunset. So over the next 3 or 4 years, the tax cuts of 2001 and 2003 will expire. And when they expire, taxes will go back up on every American in phenomenal amounts. And all we have to do is to extend those tax cuts to keep tax rates at their current levels to be responsible about tax policy. But what does this budget do? In order to facilitate the explosion of new spending that this budget contemplates, it assumes that there will be no vote in Congress to extend those tax rates, those tax cuts. And what does that mean? Let's look at the first chart here. Over the next 5 years, that means taxes are going to go up by $1.3 trillion. The lower income tax rates that people are paying today are going to go back up. The child tax credit, the marriage penalty elimination, the estate tax reductions, and the small business tax relief that was passed all go back up. 1 year of AMT fix is contemplated, but the alternative minimum tax, which is now slamming the middle class, will not be accommodated in any year of this budget except for the first year. And there are other extensions of other types of R&D tax credits and other things that are very important for our economy that will go up. When you total it all up, this budget contemplates and provides for $1.3 trillion of new taxes. Let's see what, over a 10-year period, the number is even more phenomenal. $3.9 trillion of new taxes. That's how we are facilitating the increased spending that's contemplated in this budget. So, Mr. President, as I indicated, we are now facing a situation where Washington has returned to the tax and spend policies of the past, and if we do nothing, which is what this budget contemplates, entitlement spending will continue to rage, driving up our debt. Discretionary spending will be accelerated, driving up our debt, and taxes will explode. And when those tax rates go up, remember, it's going to happen with no vote in Congress. We are simply going to sit back and let America have the hugest tax increase that it has ever had by taking no action to protect the American taxpayers. Now, I'll conclude by saying, you know, I was elected to the House of Representatives back in 1992 or 93. And ever since that time, we have tried to, in many different contexts, reduce taxes to accommodate a better tax policy and tax structure in this country. And every time that we have proposed a tax cut, that tax cut was attacked as a tax cut on the wealthy. Well, that simply is not true. As our leader said, whether you look at the alternative minimum tax, the marriage tax penalty, the small businesses, the child tax credit, or the reductions of income tax rates across the board for every taxpayer in America, these taxes squarely hit the middle class and every income category across the board. We often talk about that typical family of four and the several thousand dollars of taxes that they're going to be asked to pitch in for this, but it really is not just that typical family of four. It's a single mother, a single man, a family with children, a family without children, a married couple. Everybody who pays taxes is going to see their taxes go up and go up dramatically. In conclusion, Mr. President, I'll summarize. This budget is not responsible. It's not responsible on spending policy, it's not responsible on taxing policy, and it's not responsible because it provides for no action to deal with the entitlement reform that is so pressing in our nation. With that, Mr. President, I yield back my time.